This is the Afternoon Brief on Hi FM with Michael McKenna.
Well, every week there are the stories dominating the headlines, sparking debate around dinner tables, and these stories shape the future of our country. Well, from politics and public policy to sport, corruption, and service delivery, we're going to be taking a closer look at the biggest stories making news this week. Joining us in studio, we welcome once again Eliezer Enfield. Eliezer is a third-year politics, philosophy, and economics student at EduVos Bedfordview. And Eliezer is currently completing his work, Integrated Learning, as a news intern right here at Chai FM. Eliezer, good afternoon to you. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you in studio.
Thank you so much for having me again. It's great to be back.
Great to have you on board, Eliezer. Okay, so let's begin with the March on March group, the 600 million rand question. I have broached this issue on the show before. So let's start with the planned march. March on March demonstration. This now is happening on the 30th of June. You can confirm that. That's going to be next week, Tuesday. Now, Police Minister Feroz Khachalia says the South African police may have to spend, well, more than 600 million rand policing the event. What's your reaction to that figure?
It doesn't really make sense because it's the police's job to deal with crime. So why do they have to spend extra money for things that they're already paying for? That was my first thought. The second thought was, are we maybe again being very reactive instead of proactive? That's got to this point where we think we have to deal with it with hectic security presence as opposed to actually dealing with the issue.
Well, reaction to the reaction of the situation. I was reading some comments earlier on from prominent media personalities talking about how interesting it is that, yes, you've got all this illegal immigration going on. Of course, that it has led to this situation now where people are upset and we have a situation of xenophobia. But instead of having dealt with that issue in the first place, no, what we do is, oh, we've suddenly got 600 million rand to now sort out the police to deal with the situation. Do you see anything strange there?
Yeah, exactly. Where's this money coming from? I mean, of course, it's public funds, so tax money. There are a lot of questions around this, especially like what they haven't. The police minister didn't even actually say that we didn't get a breakdown at all of what they're actually spending 600 million rand on. And I think the public deserves more transparency on the way that our taxes are spent.
You know, Eliezer, let's look at the bigger picture also. I mean, beyond the protest itself, I mean, what does this debate really tell us about public confidence in government's ability to manage immigration and border security? Let's look at that aspect. Your take on that.
It's at rock bottom. We've gotten to the point where people want to take things into their own hand because they think that either the government is incapable of dealing with it, doesn't want to deal with it for political reasons, or generally is involved in facilitating it.
As a matter of interest, okay, well, I did mention, or rather from what memory serves, this is going to happen on the 30th of June, am I correct?
Yes.
It's happening on Tuesday. Have there been any further developments, any communications around it? For example, I'm just putting it out there. Have the demonstrators assured that there will be no violence? Have the police given out any more instructions that the public needs to know?
I haven't heard anything from the organizers. I do know that the police has entered into a partnership with private security to make sure we don't have a repeat of the 2021 Durban riots also.
Okay, let's put that aside. Let's go on to the sporting fields now. We're celebrating Bafana Bafana's historic World Cup success. Now, many of us may not realize that the Proteas women are also making headlines. And okay, so tell us, how significant was their victory over India? When did this happen, by the way?
This was on Sunday. It was Sunday night, I think. Firstly, whoever did the scheduling, who decided to schedule the ICC T20 Women's World Cup at the same time as the FIFA World Cup, I don't know. They've got another thing coming because it was always going to happen like this, that the soccer, which is the most followed sport in the world, was always going to take precedence over it. But it's a bit sad because it's unfair to both teams. In terms of the victory itself, it was very significant because it keeps the Proteas woman in the running for the knockouts rounds also.
Okay, let's just take a closer look at the performance of the Proteas women. Chasing down 158 after losing Laura Wolfart early could easily have gone wrong. So what impressed you the most about the team's performance?
Firstly, the bowling was very good. I know that this was the third highest chase in the women's T20 World Cup history, but if you follow a lot of cricket, 158 isn't actually a very high score in T20, and India are a very good side, especially their batting lineup. So that was the one thing. Then we were also backs against the wall in the chase because we were down two very early, and we were also very behind the rate that we had to go. So the fact that we just never gave up, that was like what impressed me the most.
Let's continue looking at other players. Marizan Caps, unbeaten, 81 off just 45 balls. Well, it's considered quite extraordinary. So where does now she rank among South Africa's greatest cricketers?
In terms of women's cricket, she's definitely the best all-rounder we've ever had. There isn't really any other Proteas woman player that is such a good all-around player with both batting and bowling. It's a bit harder to quantify if we do overall. But obviously, because the men's and women's games are also slightly different.
Would you say she's perhaps one of the most underappreciated sporting stars in the country?
She definitely is. I think that's also because our women sporting stars in general are very underappreciated. The men get a lot of the attention and the sponsors and those kind of things. And it, as a show right now, of course, Bafana have been like very good, but we should also be talking about the Proteas women, I think.
Okay, so let's continue talking about their next match, taking on what, the Netherlands tonight.
Wow,
what's at stake there, and how realistic are our chances of reaching the knockout stages then?
It's quite a high chance, I think, because the Netherlands are only ranked 15th in the world, and then we have Bangladesh, which we've also beaten more times than not. In men's cricket, we have a bit of a bogey against the Netherlands, but I don't know. Hopefully, it won't happen to the woman, but we've got a very good chance of making it through, I think.
Well, all the best to the women's Proteas. Let's leave the sporting fields for now and look at us residents here in Johannesburg paying more for less. Now, the city of Johannesburg has won its court battle against AfriForum. This also featured on the show yesterday, but now interested to hear your take on this. Now, this was over the controversial water demand management levy. So what exactly was this case about? Take us through that again.
So on the 27th of May, the city passed the budget, and in this budget, they approved a 67% increase in this levy. So AfriForum took them to court, and they said that this would pose an unreasonable burden upon the residents of Johannesburg. But part of the case was that they had to prove that this was urgent. But the problem is that the deadline for implementation is on the 1st of July. So the city argued that they waited too long and they had ample time to file the case. And the judges pretty much agreed with that.
The levy itself, it's rising from 65 Rand to 124 Rand. Some might argue, well, that's not a huge amount, but many residents are already under financial strain. Why has this increase triggered such anger then? What have you observed?
There's a general sort of feeling that Johannesburg residents are expected to pay more and more for less. Even like myself, we had like no water for like 2 days this week. Things like that, it's more the principle of it than the actual increase itself. And even if it's a little bit, like 67% is a big number.
Indeed. And I mean, we look at trust in local government for that matter, Eliezer. I mean, how difficult does it become now for municipalities even to justify higher charges when residents feel they're receiving less value in return?
It becomes very hard. Even in Cape Town, like, people have been getting angry, and they've got a better reputation than Johannesburg municipal government does. So it gets to a point where the government run out of money. A lot of it is because of wasteful expenditure. So then they run to the public and say, please give us more of your money to cover these costs.
Let's just put that aside for now. I have been seeing Kat Matlala appearing regularly in the headlines on different news platforms. One of the biggest stories this week is Matlala pleading guilty in relation to the 360 million Rand South African Police Services tender fraud case. Now, what stood out to you about this development?
The fact that he took the plea deal was both... That's what stood out to me. It was both shocking and kind of predictable at the same time. There was some articles on like the Daily Maverick about this before, but like he's supposed to be allegedly, obviously, according to the Lieutenant General, Nkwanazi, like he's supposed to be the head of one of the criminal cartels in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So a very high profile, alleged criminal. Obviously, he hadn't been convicted of much. So that was one of the things. I think the other thing is the fact that if you look further at like the deal, one of the things he's agreed to is basically becoming state witness informant. So basically he's going to sing for his lunch now.
And at the same time, I like that expression, singing for his supper, actually. Yeah. Matlala, he's now entered into a plea agreement and he's now cooperating with investigators. So explain to us why prosecutors often make these deals.
The prosecutors are people too. They're also looking for sort of easy wins. This could cost a lot of money and drag on for a long time. We've seen the Stalingrad tactics throughout South Africa. Jacob Zuma doing it. Even the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, has been accused of it in terms of Palapala. So that's one thing. It's an easy sort of win. The other thing might be that this guy does actually have information that could help to lead to other criminals that could save a lot of lives. This happens around the world. And then the third thing with that is that something like this is also like very high profile. So like in order to not drag the country through for too long.
You know, is there a danger, you know, Eliezer, we're bombarded with corruption and conniving and call it what you may on a daily basis. I mean, is there a danger that we as ordinary citizens can see this as another powerful individual escaping meaningful consequences? What are you reading into that?
That was the other thing that came to my mind also, was another person where it's just another plea deal, another pleading guilty. The MPA is not having very good success of actually arguing cases to conviction with high profile corruption. And that is the biggest problem, is that if he is what they claim that he is, because it's all mostly alleged, then he should be behind bars for a long time. So now, we don't know yet if he's even going to get prison time. I think there was a mention of it. But that is a big thing. It's becoming a pattern.
Eliezer, we're running out of time. Not to rush you at all, but when you look at these stories combined, we look at the immigration debate, municipal levies, corruption investigations, sporting success. What do they tell us about our country in 2026?
I don't know if I said it before, but there's like a Chinese proverb where they say, may you live in interesting times. And that is what's going on. I might have said it before, but I still stand by that statement. Yeah, sometimes you want it to be interesting, but I think a lot of us are wishing things would just calm down. We take the good, obviously, but there's also a lot of bad.
Indeed. And as we head into next week, and I'm going to bet you're going to say what I think you're going to say, but what story should we be keeping a close eye on as we go into next week?
So obviously besides the soccer, there's quite a lot going on. I knew that is what.
Okay.
But also I saw the Johannesburg MMC for Transport, Kenny Kunene from the Patriotic Alliance. He's the deputy president of that body. He said that the Joburg Roads Agency can't fix any of the roads and things like that because their vehicles have run out of petrol, which is kind of sad.
To say the least. And of course, what impact would that now? I'm unable to, conduct service delivery, depending on how you define it in this day and age, how that goes forward. But it's certainly been another fascinating week of headlines, debates about immigration, service delivery, corruption, and of course, at least some bright spark coming out of our lives today, sporting performances from both Bafana Bafana and the Proteas women. At least they've been doing things right on the field. And as always, the stories may be different, but they all come back to the same question. What kind of South Africa are we building, constructing? And who's being held accountable along the way?